CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 155 with Dr. David Granite. The future of AI and ophthalmology, how it's going to change your career. You must listen to this episode. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today, I got a very special guest. I was recently at the New Orleans Academy of Ophthalmology. Fantastic meeting, by the way. And I heard a speaker give multiple talks about AI. They were so good. I was absolutely entertained. I was so into it. I even took notes. And that is Dr. David Granite. Welcome to our podcast, my friend.
You're incredibly kind. Thank you. It was a fun meeting, wasn't it?
It was great. Now, you're the chair of Pediatric Ophthalmology Strabismus and director of the Eye Center there at UC San Diego, the Shiley Eye Center. You're also, you're a better host than me. You're Emmy Award winning host.
I think that both of us have an itch to educate people. And we've taken advantage of that. I talked to lay people doing a show called Health Matters for many years. We brought doctors on, and Uday, we made them talk in English, which is, you know, no easy feat.
Right.
And we explained everything from, you know, your feet to your head and talked it all through. But it was really, what was really amazing was it was a half hour show. And you know this from your show. And that at the end of a half an hour, most of the doctors would lean in and say, God, that went fast. I have so much more I wanted to say. And I would ask them, how often do you spend 30 minutes with your patients? And they would all lean back and it would hit them that they don't do as good a job as we should explaining to patients. Actually, AI may help us with that.
How's that? How do you think?
Yeah, well, so, you know, there's so many, AI has gotten, you know, it's in the news everywhere you go, everywhere you turn, you hear about it, but AI isn't AI. There's so many different branches to it. So there are patient-facing AIs. Right now, ChatGPT says 40 million people each day ask a medical question. Most of those come after hours. And the list of things they ask is just kind of, I mean, it's really unbelievable. It's not what you think. It's about insurance. It's about claims. It's about then finally understanding what their doctor said to them. And those are the top three things that people look up on AI. So whether you like it or not, your patients are already using AI to look up stuff.
Right.
So we're all there now. And you know, the ChatGPT figured this out. So they now have ChatGPT Health. And that meeting that you and I were at, which was less than a month ago, there's already been 50 things that have happened since then. The rapidity with which this whole development of AI and health is moving is mind blowing. I got asked to do that talk because a year ago, I gave a workshop at our national meetings on AI. I had to gut the whole talk and start over because so much had changed. And in the last month, AI, ChatGPT has released ChatGPT for Health. Claude released Claude for Health, which now goes on to clinical trials and puts it all together for you. Gemini released and then pulled back their health module because there were some issues with it. So I think that you have an Apple Watch. I'm not sure if you're wearing one or not yet.
I'm wearing it now, but yes.
So your health app can connect with ChatGPT and it can interact, giving all your health information to ChatGPT. And you can ask it, what should I ask my doctor? What's going on? What do you think about this? So patient education is already happening, but it's not controlled by physicians. It's by the AI just interacting with your patients. So we need to get involved in this and start figuring out how can we use AI to better educate our patients.
Well, that's super important because like now I'll get patients doing a little research before my consultation and they'll come in with a list that was printed out right from ChatGPT. And while I want to help them, it's just like, they'd ask crazy questions like, they'd say to me, which FACO machine are you going to use for my cataract surgery? Clearly, you've done some homework here, but I don't think that's the relevant issue here.
Yeah, Charlie Kelman's turning over in his grave when he hears that. So what we're talking about is exactly that issue, is that you have people who don't have the clinical knowledge. They may be smarter than me and you, right?
Sure.
They may be brilliant engineers. They may be brilliant accountants or brilliant physicists, but they're not used to clinical medicine. So this information comes without context. And the context is everything, as you and I know. So what about, you know, something we did was we created deep fakes of ourselves.
Okay.
My partner, Shira Robbins, and I, we work with a company called Tavis, and we have more projects that we're doing with them, created a deep fake of ourselves, and then educated it and trained it so that it could give preoperative data and information to our patients. We're working now on having it answer questions when a patient wants to talk about the surgery. Let's say somebody you're operating on wanted to ask you about premium IOLs,
sure.
EDOF, multifocal, monofocal. What do I do? Well, you know, your avatar could answer those questions because it's repetitive, right? And you could have it all set up so that it could interact with the patient and answer those questions.
Which is so cool, right?
Right.
I mean, it's basically like a deep fake of you. So it's your face, your voice, your intonation, your language, and explaining it back, interacting with the patient so you may not have to spend an hour with every patient.
Yeah, and you know, there was a study that was done here out of UCSD, and a couple other people have repeated it, where patients have said that they like the answers they get, written answers, from AI better than they like from the doctor. Because AI has no time limit, right? It spews out this long, flowing answer and we shoot off a one-liner, right? Yeah, keep taking your medicine, whatever it is. And AI gives you this long, empathetic, oh, I'm sorry to hear that you're having discomfort. Let's see what we can do about it. And we don't have the time for that. So your avatar, your deep fake could do all of that.
Wow. 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 Now, in terms of AI, this is kind of not your first foray. I actually looked up. You actually, many years ago, started with an IDX digital photographer.
Yeah. You really did your homework. In the late 90s, we'd created the first digital photo screener to be able to take a picture of kids. Light goes through the eye and bounces off the retina, right?
Yeah.
So it has all this information about what it's touched and what it's gone through. And that's where parents don't want to see red reflexes in the eye. Yeah. And there are all these cameras that diminish it. We worked with Kodak and we built a camera that actually increased the red reflex. And because it goes in the eye and back out, we had all the information that we could tell you if the eyes were aligned, if there was something going on with the retina. We could tell you whether or not there was a significant refractive error, and it was all done automated, not by humans at all. So we've been working in this field for quite a long time.
So can we get there now? Can I not have some sort of AI watching, using my, I'll play, have a kid play a video game on the laptop, and the camera's laptops focus on the kid's eyes and look, tracks all the eye movement and says, hey, this kid's got an esotropia, esophoria. Can it diagnose that?
Yeah, it's happening now. There are companies doing that right now. And not just for strabismus and not just for ocular alignment. You're talking about companies that are going to build little storefronts, right? You know, up in LA, you go into your strip mall, there's a storefront, and you're going to get your visual field. You're going to get your OCT. They're going to check your intraocular pressure. They're going to look at all the factors that go into glaucoma, like look at the optic nerve and analyze it. And AI is going to tell you, yeah, you need to go talk to the doctor. Oh, keep taking your drops. Why do we need the doctor? And you know, where that's going to make a huge, huge advantage is in places where they have low resources. Mm. So you take a country where they don't have a lot of resources, and now we can plug that in. Wow, that's a game changer. And we already don't have enough doctors in the United States. So can you imagine be able to make us more productive and more efficient by having that all done? I'll tell you where that's happening right now. Here at UCSD and at all sorts of other places around the country, at your internal medicine visit, if you're a diabetic, they will put you on a fundus camera that we have installed in the internal medicine doc's office. Okay. It will take a fundus photograph. AI will analyze it. You need to go see your retinologist. You don't. And so that because we know the number of diabetics that don't even get their exams is too high. So this is a way to make sure they get checked without ever going to see the ophthalmologist and that they don't go blind or lose vision because of it.
So maybe I could crank out a whole clinic day just from the comfort of my laptop and in my house. Because if a patient goes in, you get the acuity check, you get a refraction, auto-rate refraction, you get a topography, tomography, you get an OCT of the optic nerve, the macula, you get a visual field test.
Right.
And obviously give me slit lamp pictures and retina pictures. Do I need to see the patient?
You need to talk to them. That's about it. Or your avatar can talk to them.
Right.
Right. So, and you know, this even goes further than that, past just patient diagnostics.
Okay.
Because, you know, we can obviously talk about radiology, pathology, the 8-hour shift, and they're kind of fading and you know, they have to wake up. The AI doesn't get tired.
Right.
It doesn't miss something in the corner of the slide that they wouldn't otherwise see. So there's obvious advantage to it. But it even's getting better than I said. It falls right into your lap. You know, I want to congratulate you on something, because you have made it okay to get coaching for cataract surgery.
Right.
And we've talked about this in sports. You know, if you're Shohei Ohtani, you go to spring training, you work yourself up, you get coaching. I'm in San Diego. Tony Gwynn, one of the greatest hitters of all time, was the first guy to go in to spring training every year. And the coaches talk to him. One of the greatest hitters of all time. You graduate your fellowship or your residency, no coaching. And so you have created the opportunity for people to get coaching. Right. Sarah Bozarg did this incredible video that you helped her with.
She
was trying to learn the Yamati procedure. And you were one of the people talking to her, even online like this, to give her feedback and some coaching information. Cataract coach, it's not just a way to get help, but it's a statement that all of us, as we go on in our career, still need coaching, can still learn and still get better, right? So AI can watch you operate. It can evaluate the video and give you feedback.
Yeah.
Coaching by AI, because Uday trained it and taught it what to look for. So I mean, imagine now that you can start putting coaching out to people who have been out 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and do what you have created by hand, by the dint of your effort, a coaching platform where people can continue to learn. And now we can start using AI to help us with those kinds of opportunities.
Right. I think the truth is, and sometimes we don't realize this when we're young, when you're done with your residency and fellowship and training, that's when you begin learning for the rest of your career. That's not the end of the learning. It's literally the beginning.
Yes. And you know, health systems are running into this whole issue of calling doctors providers.
Right.
And then if you're a provider, you're not in a relationship. We used to have doctor-patient relationships. Yeah. You can't rip somebody out of the relationship, but now you're a provider of a service. And they think that somebody who just finished their residency could replace you because you're both cataract surgeons.
Right.
Well, that's the furthest thing from the truth.
Right.
And we all know that because of the education you get over the years. And a little bit of gray hair goes a long way in understanding, because you've been there, done that. So, yeah, but where did they turn to learn? Now they have the cataract coach. Seriously, Atul Gawande wrote about this. Others have talked about it. Where do surgeons go to get coaching?
Right.
You created that platform, and you deserve kudos for that.
Oh, thank you. It means a lot, because it's there's a fine line between passion and crazy. And I'm trying to straddle it very carefully, because I mean, I've done 2,850 videos, one a day, every day. I've never missed a day in 8 years. That's a little bit passionate. It's a little bit crazy.
Yeah, but you know it takes the crazy people to make a difference in the world, right?
It does.
When you look at the night sky, you don't see the stars. You see the shooting stars.
Right.
And you're a shooting star that everybody sees, and you're making a difference.
I appreciate it.
Well, and even at the New Orleans meeting, you got up. I think I do okay, right? You get up and no slides. I like killed myself to have slides. You're like, yeah, just play my video. And you talk over the video and you're teaching extemporaneously off a video with no slides. And I'm going, holy cow, this is a master at work. So bravo.
Well, you know, I do that because they say give a 30-minute talk. So I make a video that's 29 and a half minutes. So if you literally hit play, I can't be a second over. And then any slides I have, it's just all incorporated into a video. So instead of PowerPoint, it's just one big file. Now, it's interesting. Cataract Coach has now been integrated into Gemini. So the crazy part, so I'll actually use Gemini to write an outline if I want to write a paper about something.
Right.
And so then I look at it and I said, okay, what were your sources? And the sources that it gives, half of the sources were like, Academy, iNet, this, half of them are Cataract Coach. So Google, because Google owns YouTube, has basically got the transcript from all my videos. That's been all, put into as the data for AI. So now when it writes something, it's like in my wording even.
Think about how amazing that is, how it extends you.
Right.
And what's going to happen when we're gone and, you know, the video version of you exists. But it also raises an issue about articles about research, AI, JAMA AI, New England Journal of Medicine AI. We've published a bunch of articles on AI. We wrote one on, can ChatGPT write like an ophthalmologist? And by the time you publish your article, it's obsolete because the new version has come out. And last night, because I was preparing for this, last night I'm looking at some of the newer articles, and there's an article that came out that compared the rapidity with which ChatGPT is learning versus residents. Oh. And they took residents that they put on the OCAPs or opposite ChatGPT last year and how they did against each other. And then they took the same residents a year later and ChatGPT a year later, and ChatGPT is now doing better when they were doing worse before. It learned faster than the residents. Right. So we have all this going on. You review for journals. I review for journals. We're not supposed to use AI to review, but that's coming. Mm-hmm. They're going to analyze it. And then we have questions like, what's the governance for the use of AI? I'll throw a scary one at you.
Okay.
Imagine you're a lawyer. I know that you don't want to think that way, but imagine you're a lawyer and somebody comes to you because there was a bad outcome and the doctor used AI. The first thing that's going to happen is that lawyer is going to use that as an issue. Oh, doctor, you didn't trust your own judgment. You used AI. Now flip it. Let's say a bad outcome and you did not use AI. The first thing the lawyer is going to say is, doctor, are you so smart? You know everything. You didn't use the AI. So we have an obligation to use and not use at the same time. And we have no governance. We have no laws. We have no rules about how that's going to flesh out.
So you can't win. So the bottom line is you always need the doctor because you have to have someone to blame.
Yeah. Yes. And it's always going to be up to us to take responsibility and do the right thing. So, that leads us into robotic surgery, right? I know that you have been a pioneer in that world. We look at human retinal surgeons and the tremor they have, even the best ones, is like 156 nanometers. I mean, like tiny, but a robot doesn't have any.
Right.
And you can canalize now retinal vessels, and you can do things in a stability way that you couldn't do before. And we're looking at smallest of small, and you've been pioneering this. Well, if something goes wrong, who's responsible? Are they ever going to be autonomous, like my car that drives itself?
Right.
Are we going to let the robot, Elon Musk says that he can put a robot in the middle of a rural area and it can do the surgery. And we're going to have autonomous surgeons in 3 years, according to him. I think that's a little fast.
Yeah, the time, I don't know, but certainly we're getting there. If you look at like autonomous cars now, here in Los Angeles, we have the Waymo cars, these Google cars that basically have no drivers in them at all. And they've been pretty flawless.
Yes. My son is up in San Francisco. We go up there. They have the Waymo. My wife prefers the Waymo over the Uber drivers, who she doesn't always feel as comfortable with. So, we default to Waymo. And the first time you sit in that car, right, you freak out a little bit.
A little weird.
And then suddenly you start realizing how good that is and how what a good job it does in getting from place to place. In fact, the Waymo risk factor is less than a human driver. So, they're doing a pretty darn good job right now.
So can we get an AI, like a large language model, to think like an ophthalmologist? Is there a secret sauce that we have? I know you've published on this, but how can we do that?
Yeah. So, it's really interesting because we talk about predictive AI.
Okay.
That looks at something and predicts what's about to happen next. Two cars are going to hit each other or something like that. Then there's generative AI, which generates language. Nice. We have AIs that act as assistants, and now we're starting to get AIs that act as agents. So walking through that, how AI works, first off, the black box inside, nobody's exactly sure how it works, which is scary to start with. It's trained on all this information, so it learns what comes next. So it's really a prediction machine of what word would come next in the sentence. Mm-hmm. And what words are next to it. So if you say the word queen, king is nearby. And so that might be used. And depending upon the context, it picks what the next word should be and how it makes sentences. So the prompt then becomes everything. And the standard old prompt was, you give it a role. You are an expert in ophthalmology, especially cataract surgery. I'm 75 years old. Now you give it the context, and I'm about to have cataract surgery. I've been nearsighted my whole life. Walk me through it. Now you give it what you wanted to do. So it's role, context, and outcome. Walk me through the various different intraocular lenses and make suggestions. So now you've set it up so that the words that are nearby are based upon the words that make sense for ophthalmology. And that was one of the articles we published. We redid a process that somebody else did and said that ChatGPT was just okay, but they did it. It's called a zero shot prompt. They didn't give it any prompt. They just said, tell me what lens to use. And we found out that it changes completely when you give it the role, you're an ophthalmologist, the context, I'm 75 years old, and then you start asking it the questions. So asking it, setting it up right, that's been the standard now for the last couple of years. We're actually getting way beyond that, where you can give it a brain. You can upload your brain. Don't use certain words. I like this. Do that. And you can give it so much more context and drive it to write like you, to talk like you, to think like you. Absolutely. So we're getting to that point where you can do all of that with the right prompts and the right setup.
So prompt engineering is a huge topic. That's something we really need to spend more time learning about that.
Yeah, well, yes. And there are courses in school that now teach prompt engineering. I looked up prompt engineering as a job. Okay. And it starts at more money than a starting ophthalmologist makes at a residency. Okay. So I'm just saying that here we are about what's important in the world. And if we value things by how much we pay for it,
right?
That's it. That's what's going on right now. And I can tell you, full disclosure, my son has an AI company. It does customer service. He does some work in healthcare. So, you know, you call a front desk to make an appointment and you might get his AI chatting with you. Okay. And by the way, it'll remember every time you call. Well, wow. This week he announced that he's working with Soulja Boy, the rapper, okay. and now they own the rights to Soulja Boy's voice. So you could call up and Soulja Boy could be in. You could talk to him right now. So, that's how good this is getting to that point. And you know, at some point, why do you need a front desk person when you could have a screen with an avatar and they remember who you are? When you call, you get the same person. It's never any doubt. Oh, yes. I remember last time you called Tuesday, it was not good for you. Is that still the case?
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
It never forgets. How's your son doing? You know? And so the customer service side of this, and you and I haven't even touched on operations, right, on how it can figure out how many cataracts you can do in a day. When you book the cases, with the complexity it is, it will know. And then it'll figure out which days to put them all together, what the flow is in your clinic. How about your billing and collections? You can automate that with AI.
Would be so nice.
Yeah. But you know what sucks? Uh-huh. Insurance companies are using AI
to block us.
Yes. And ProPublica did an analysis of Cigna and showed that they had one doctor rejecting 60,000 claims in an hour.
In 1 hour.
In 1 hour, which is obviously not possible.
Hardworking doctor.
Right. Yeah, very hardworking doctor. So, you know, how do the individual doctor then gets on the phone for an hour to battle one, you know, to battle one of those denials? So we're already tilted in the way the playing field is. It's not level. And it's being used right now by those insurance companies.
Wow. Like a brave new world. So everything's going to change for us. So we'll change, like in our clinics, the phone interaction is going to change.
Yep.
The front desk is going to change. The surgical schedule is going to change. I like your idea there that this AI will say, oh, this is a routine cataract. Book it for this normal spot. This one, small pupil pseudo exfoliation, loose zonules. That's going to take more time.
Yep.
Line it up for us.
Yeah. I mean, our schedule right now runs in time blocks. Right. Well, you know, you would know that this that in the last 1,000 that you've done, it took you, you know, 19 minutes to this complicated one. And for the easier one, it's taking you, I don't know, 5 minutes, 4 minutes. You're so slick at this but it would know that, and it would be able to time those in a much more effective way and be able to increase your OR utilization in the same day, which is your efficiency, because all you have is time. And if you can't make your time efficient, then we're failing.
Wow. So obviously AI is going to completely change ophthalmology. Our podcast is listened to by mostly ophthalmologists who are, let's say 30 to 50 is my sweet spot. Although everyone listens. What advice do you have for them? Because if you're a young doctor, 35, 40 years old, finished your training recently, you're starting in the workforce, this is 100% going to impact you. How do you put a foot into this? How do you get involved?
Yeah. Let me frame it this way. Yesterday I had a meeting with a PhD about research, and he said to me, I use AI every day. I think that we're getting to the point where people touch AI virtually every day. AI is responding to email. AI is writing for you. AI is talking for you. So I think that the younger folks, in fact, the articles that we did were with our chief resident at the time, Jimmy Chen, who had a degree in information technology. I mean, thank God I had somebody younger with me, you know. I felt like my mother used to feel when she'd say, teach me how to use this email thing, you know. And now here we are with AI. So I think they're more comfortable with it, and maybe the generation that helps us move into AI and integrate it. Sally Baxter is here at UCSD.
Right.
She's working with the Academy of Ophthalmology. She's gotten grant after grant. She's like one of the top people to watch in ophthalmology under 40. And she's doing this right now, looking at the role and how to integrate AI into the clinic. She's the one who put together our diabetes program. So there are people that are doing this now. And so what's fascinating, Uday, there are so many questions. So think about this. ChatGPT updates its software. Okay. Does the FDA have to approve it to say it still knows how to do?
Nope, it's not.
It doesn't. The FDA took the hands off. So, you know, if you change a phaco machine, somebody's got to, you know, show that it works. Yeah. If you change, so the AI is changing all the time, which means we're chasing it to keep up with it. And so does the new version of ChatGPT work as well as the old one in analyzing diabetic retinopathy? We have to look at that. Who's going to put together the algorithms and figure out things that we didn't even think about? I am absolutely certain that AI is going to look at OCT and spot things we never saw. Right. It's going to see it. And it's going to look at that combined with IOP and the nerve fiber layer and all the other stuff. And it's going to come together in a different way, but who's going to watch over that? Who's going to? So we need people like Sally. We need people who are young, who are doing the research to grind this out. And if you look at our articles now that are coming out in ophthalmology, there is an enormous body of literature. The number of patents and grants in AI has skyrocketed over the last 2 years. Right. And all this is because the research has to be done, but then it gets done all over again. We used an earlier version of ChatGPT for our study that we did. Well, would the new one be as good? So you can almost publish every time they come out with a new version. You can redo all your studies, which, you know, is an academic way to grind out stuff. But there's a reason to do it, to make sure that it's on top of what you want to do. And then we get to agents that can act for you. And then we're going to get to artificial general intelligence, where is it really truly thinking for itself? Emoti, the guy who is ahead of Anthropic, he has Dario Emoti. He has been predicting that over the next 3 years, AI is going to be better at almost everything that any human does.
Right. Well, even now, if you look at like the examination of retinal fundus photos, I can't tell gender, male or female, by looking at fundus photo, but the AI can.
Mind-blowing, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, I've been doing this for 32 years, right? I came out of my residency 32 years ago. I can't tell, you know? Right. And we don't even know how it figured it out.
Well, that's the crazy part too, right?
Right. That does become crazy. And then what's private and what's not private? What do we do with HIPAA? And if we're uploading, you're not supposed to upload articles. And I have a book that I wrote on for pediatricians about the eye and about ophthalmology. It turns out my book was uploaded into one of the LLMs, the large language models, without asking. And they just took it and used it. And there's huge lawsuits going on over this about what's private, what's public, what about patient data. you know, where, who owns that? And doctors are being asked to help train models, and they're getting paid for that 1 hour of time, but the ROI on that's going to be enormous for somebody else.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, my advice for my son was, Dad, don't sell your expertise. You know, I mean, get a part of that company if they want your expertise. What my own son said to me. It's great when a 25-year-old is giving you advice, you know.
Well, I think, you know, the mistake I've made is obviously that everything I put up online is easily accessible. I'm sure somewhere in the YouTube terms of agreement that I already agreed to is that they have access to all of this. Right. So when I actually do prompt engineering for me to write something, I actually start off with a prompt that you are cataract coach, a known expert in this field. Write me this in the cataract coach voice, and just boom, it's just done.
Right. Yes. Yes. And go on LinkedIn or any of these sites, and almost everything is being written now, but you can see it. It's written by LLMs because people suck at the prompt, right, and they don't edit themselves and they don't make it better. But and the image generation, you know, at that meeting in New Orleans, I showed pictures and said to people, real or fake?
Yeah, can tell.
And even since then, it's gotten so much better. There was Hollywood, one of the studios is suing Gemini and Nano Banana, you know, the site, because they made a video clip of Brad Pitt fighting with Tom Cruise like it was in a movie. You couldn't tell the difference, right? So they can now fake it and you wouldn't know. This could be an avatar I'm talking to right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we won't know. And that's going to get scary at some point.
Well, the change has been so dramatic. If you look at AI generated video from 3 years ago, it looks very primitive. If you look at it now, it's shockingly real. So then, I mean, forget ophthalmology, the movie, the entertainment industry, they're cooked.
Yeah, that's why there was a strike last year. Right. They saw this coming and they struck to make sure that their image and likeness, they could patent it, they could control it, and it wouldn't be used to this way. If you look at one of the recent Star Wars movies, Carrie Fisher had already passed away, and they edit her into the movie, right? But, so, you know,
they'll make their own celebrities. They won't base it on a Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise. They'll just say, here, we're making a new person, more handsome, more strong, better this, better that. And then you got a new character.
Yeah, and it's already happened. There are people online that have millions of followers that aren't people, that are AI avatars. And there's models that are doing it that are fake, that are all avatars, that have a following, that people watch them. It's astonishing that that's the world we're stepping into. So in your office, you know, how do you take advantage of some of this? You can certainly, you know, you can teach a patient with this kind of material. It's going to be easy for you to make teaching materials for a patient, because you can say, create a video teaching about cataract surgery and intraocular lenses, show how light is focused and what it will do, and wham, you're going to get a video out of it. So that'll be easy and that'll help you. And your cataract coach videos are going to absolutely positively be training a robot to act autonomously. You know they're going to use them because you're at the top of your field. And right, they're going to go to those. Maybe they'll grab Steve Safran's or some of the other people out there to look for the some of the stuff that he does. So this is out there and it's coming, and we can try and keep up in our office with operations and make ourselves more efficient. We can fight the insurance companies. We can educate our patients using ChatGPT and other LLMs. But this is a sea change. Think about how we're going to teach residents and fellows and medical students going forward. Just, you know, you stop and pause for that.
Yeah.
You know what they're doing now? Our medical students say, they tell ChatGPT, create a learning module for me so that when I start my ophthalmology rotation, I'll sound like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, they're doing it now. Again, I have two kids in med school. This is how they study. They'll put all the material in and say, quiz me on this. Or I have a test coming up. The test is going to be, you know, 80 multiple choice questions. Get all this stuff. Make me quiz after quiz after quiz.
Yeah. And make those questions seem like my professor's questions, you know, right? Which isn't that hard. So, yeah, and that's what's happening right now. Hopefully, it'll be used in positive ways that will be helpful, for example, as coaching, because you can't be everywhere. But maybe an AI can analyze a video and give some feedback based upon cataract coach.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's just bananas. It's so hard to imagine where it's going to go, because the last couple of years have been so dramatic in terms of the change. I remember starting off first time using ChatGPT. I asked some simple questions. I got fooled very easily, very easily. At the beginning, I just said, "How many states have the letter X in it?" And it came up with like wrong answers.
Yes.
And now it's like, oh, so much better.
Yeah,
so it's right now. Like you said, you've got to do great prompt engineering, but then the response it gets, you just can't cut and paste that. You need to edit it yourself to put back the human element.
Right, and they still hallucinate articles. I mean, I've asked it to list my own articles, and it hallucinates some that I never wrote and that I knew, but less than it used to. Yeah. And I tell it, double check and go back and look up each one of these articles that you listed and find a link to it and make sure that they're real. And suddenly the hallucinations disappear.
Right. Is it going back to that prompt engineering? This is why the prompt engineers are worth more than ophthalmologists.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's good that patients are educated. Right. But without context, that education is a little meaningless. They need somebody to explain it to them. Well, I think our AIs are going to be able to do that. Elon Musk is talking about a world where people have a lot more free time, because so much is done by AI and robots. He shut down the factory that makes the Model S and the Model X Tesla here in California, so they can start building robots there in that factory.
That's crazy time. Now, the question is though, so up until, let's say, a few years ago, everything the robot trained on was human produced. My content, your book. Now that you see on LinkedIn, I'd say most of the posts, it's not worth reading anymore, most of the posts are AI generated.
Right.
So when do we get to the point where like most of the internet content being created per year, all new content is mostly AI, and then eventually it's 99% AI, and then what do you train the robot on? Or the AI on, do you train it on its own output?
Yeah, well, that's when you start getting towards artificial general intelligence, AGI, and I'm worried, okay, you've touched on a hot nerve for me. Yeah. You know, our kids in school are using these, right? So my youngest is in college right now. And I kind of said, have you used your AI to write some of your papers? No, you know, we're not supposed to do that. But maybe it checks what I write, you know, kind of thing. And so where are the good writers going to come from?
I don't know.
Is artwork going to now be describing what you want to the AI? Right. Are people still going to pick up a brush? Are they still going to build things? I mean, an architect designing a building, where are those skill sets going to come from when you need a human to still do it? And where our kids are going to lose that skill. Now, maybe we sound like old people who are complaining that kids don't know how to write cursive, but there are consequences. And you know this, we have residents who come in and they grip a pen like this,
right,
or like that, and their fine motor skills just aren't what they should be because they never learned how to write in script and use a pen properly, like a surgical instrument. And so there are consequences to some of this where you start saying, okay, well, they're typing a lot or using voice dictation, you know, which is its own problem, but they don't know how to use their hands that way. Hey, do you watch The Pit?
No, I don't watch any TV.
All right. So The Pit is this show that takes place in an emergency room.
Okay.
And last week, this is how relevant it is, they had somebody using AI as a scribe.
Okay.
And they sent a patient up to surgery out of the ED. And the surgeon comes down and goes, I can't believe you sent me somebody. You didn't tell me they had previous abdominal surgery. And the resident says, well, they didn't. She goes, in your note, it says they did. And the AI had written it in the note.
Oh.
And, you know, it gets copied and pasted and forwarded.
Right.
And you have to check. It's still the doctor's responsibility. Right off the bat, for an AI scribe, we just started AI scribing here at UCSD. So it's real. This is not the future. This is today.
So then we're losing now more of the human element. So I guess the AI is going to have this great knowledge and ability to do all this stuff, but doesn't want to accept responsibility. So we always have to have the doctor to blame. And then, are we losing the human element? Can the AI have an emotion? Can it have a good heart? Because there's more to medicine than just the technical part of it or the brain part of it. There's the heart part of it. Are we losing that?
Yes. In writing, the AI shows empathy. And there are people that now use an AI as their therapist.
Whoa. Right?
And they're for psychiatry. They can't be everywhere, but now you have something you can talk to. And in fact, there's a great program that I think is very exciting for older adults with dementia, where they have a screen and it's a buddy. And in fact, somebody created a little robot that moves and can shrug and bend its head as it talks to you and remembers everything that you said. It's got a camera. So if the older person falls or gets hurt, it can call for help. Wow. It could look like me and talk to my parents and then send me a summary at the end of the day about what was talked about. So I know. And somebody with dementia wouldn't know the difference. That, you know, that's pretty exciting to say, but it's a little weird too. Are we outsourcing our parental care and the care of people with dementia to do that? So let me ask you.
Yeah.
Your kids are in med school.
Yeah.
Are they learning how to break down a medical problem or are they entering it? You know, I mean, where's the thought process that's going to go with how you evaluate a patient? If the AI is writing the note,
right,
the AI comes up with a differential. Where's your thought process? Understanding. You understand the eye. When something goes wrong, you know why it goes wrong.
Yeah, yeah,
you know what happened and what to do to fix it because you understand it. It's not just being told.
Right.
Are they teaching that in med school?
I hope. I'm not 100% sure. It's for sure it's changing. It's changing very fast.
Yeah.
That's what the thing I'm afraid of is like losing the human element. Even like, okay, if I get dementia, I'm going to talk to the screen all day. You know what? I'd rather get a couple of great dogs and go live out in a cabin in the woods and don't talk to anyone.
Yeah, it'll be an electronic dog. Right? So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. You know, when a patient has something bad happening and they come into my office, the first thing I say to them is, I'm so sorry you're going through this. And the number of times they've said to me that no one's ever said that or how much they appreciate it.
Yeah.
That there's a human who recognizes another human's in pain.
Right.
I don't know if an AI can duplicate that. People seem to be fooled by AIs. There are these stories about, you know, kids online dating AIs and thinking they have a girlfriend that's an AI. It spooks me a little.
It's just kind of weird where this is all going, right? It's just, I mean, we obviously talk about the ophthalmology aspect of it, but even our daily lives, everything is so AI. I don't even Google search anymore. I just Gemini. I put it in Gemini always.
Right. And people, when they Google search, the first thing is the AI summary.
Right.
Right. So, that's changed. And now ChatGPT is about to put out ads. And I don't know if you saw the Super Bowl, but during the Super Bowl, Claude, one of its competitors, made a big issue how they won't have ads and ChatGPT will. How will those ads infiltrate the answers you get? What SUV should I buy for my wife? You know, she wants a new car, blah, blah, blah. Well, Ford makes a great SUV. Why are they saying that? Is it because Ford paid to be at the top of the answer?
Of course it's going to be. Of course, no question.
Right. So
it could be in medicine too. You'll ask about some treatment. They'll say, no, don't lose weight and exercise and get into shape. Instead, take this medicine.
The GLP-1, right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. And which lens implant I get? Well, the Alcon made lens is a wonderful, wow. Right? I mean, so yeah, I think that we're gonna run into that as well. If that's where governance and control and legal issues become really important in how this is all gonna work. And there's international issues. China is creating AIs, but we can still access them. There's gonna be a lot of that goes on about how this is all gonna come to fruition. And I think we have to be very careful about what those rules are going to look like. And as always, if doctors are not at the table, they will be on the menu. And so we have to be a part of that discussion.
But now there's no regulation of the AI at all. But in terms of what we do, let's say in ophthalmology, do you know we don't have low power toric lens in the US? So the lowest we have corrects 1.5 diopter on the IOL plane. We don't have like the T2 IOLs that are available to the rest of the world because they're not, quote, FDA approved because of nonsensical reasons.
Right.
So even a slight change in IOL, no, it requires a big approval. But you're going to have a mega change in an LLM, which has far greater impact. Regulated.
Yeah, it's not regulated. And it's that's going to be an issue, right? I mean, we have to figure out what to do with that. And one thing it just hit me that you and I didn't even touch on in this wide-ranging discussion is drug discovery. And new treatment discovery that AI is actually unbelievably good at. Just that it can look at receptor sites. It can design drugs. David Feigenbaum at Penn, it's an unbelievable story. He was a medical student. He had Castleman syndrome, which I didn't even know what that was. I had to look it up. It's so rare. And he was dying. And he found a way to repurpose a drug that existed. And he had to convince people to give it to him, save his own life. And now he's got this whole center at Penn for repurposing medication. And he's gotten millions and millions of dollars in funding for to take the drugs that are currently existing, look at how it works, and say, is there another disease that we could use it for? And this is an already approved drug, so we can repurpose it. We don't have to go through that FDA process.
Wow.
It could be used for that. So, and he's doing that with AI right now. And it's an unbelievable story to see that unfold right in front of us.
Just crazy, changing times.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I my son is at Penn, and so I contacted Feigenbaum, and I'm going to go visit his lab then my next trip out, because mind blown by all this, and I want to understand what they're doing and how they're doing it, because I, like you said, I want to stay up to date on this. I want to understand what's going on. And it's weird. I'll tell you that when I gave the first talk on this at the Pediatric Ophthalmology National Meetings, my son flew in and took the podium with me, along with Jimmy Chen and Shira Robbins. Jimmy was our chief resident. And here's this, he was 24 at the time, and he's standing on the podium. His company is killing it. Mm-hmm. And he's casually relaxed. He's like, Dad, do I have to wear a button-down shirt? And I'm telling you, no one cared about what I said, but everyone was on the edge of their seats to hear my 24-year-old talk. Right. At the very end, somebody said to him, his name's Isaiah, Isaiah, do you think in the future we'll still need doctors? And I turned to figure out, what is my 24-year-old kid going to say? And he pauses and he thinks and he says, in the future, doctors will still be needed to deliver care, but they won't be deciding care.
Wow, that's crazy.
Right. And that's the venture capital, private equity, tech bros view of how this is all about to go. They think they can do it better, faster, cheaper, and they expect to do that.
Wow, that's just mind blown then. So then I don't need to be involved in anything other than I'm just the hands now, because ultimately the robot will do it. So why even have me have the AI get all the screening data, all the exams of the eye and scans and whatever else, come up, here's your diagnosis, here's the plan, here's the treatment you need, and then the robot just does the surgery, you're done. I'm not needed.
So if you're the CEO of a healthcare system, what are you thinking about?
Get rid of those expensive doctors. Get them out of here.
Yeah. I mean, they think about things differently. I went back to school and got a master's in healthcare management because I want to know how they think and understand that. There's a different mindset. And you know, the insurance companies like United Healthcare that has that vertical integration where they own doctors now, they own more doctors than any other system in the country. Like over 90,000 doctors work for United Healthcare. And they're going to have that vertical integration. They're the payer. They're the decider of care. Wow. They're the people who give you your drugs. And then they're going to have AI because it's much less expensive than this pain in the butt humans that they have to deal with that need benefits and all the other things that go along with it. And they'll control it vertically. And that's the way they think. So it's going to come. And you can imagine that the CEOs are looking at that right now.
But then we're losing things of, like we talked about before, the empathy stuff. We're going to lose ethics. We're going to lose like human judgment, human emotion. I don't know where this is going.
Well, when your children decided to go to med school, did you dissuade them or did you encourage them?
I just stay out of their way, to be very frank. Since they're about 10, 12 years old, my kids never listen to me. Just do what you want. I mean, you're not going to listen to me anyway.
All right. Sounds like your kids know mine. So
yeah,
do you think our best and brightest, are they going to go into medicine anymore if this is the way it is?
It doesn't make sense.
Right. You know, coming out of college now, what do you think they're talking about? So I think there's still a role for researchers. I think there's still a role for a lot of places for doctors, but different than it used to be.
Right. No, definitely. I mean, obviously I have a bias and first-hand knowledge about the robotic stuff. That's certainly going to come.
Yeah, are you able to share any of that right now? I mean, we're talking about it.
Yes,
about your efforts in robotics.
Yeah, so I worked very close with Horizon Surgical in October of last year in El Salvador. We did the world's first trial. Incredible team. I'm just one member of a very big team, but I got to be the one to drive the robot. But there, you know, there's a significant portion of automation coming. And as you said earlier, look at, I know my precision, the best I can do is about, with an instrument in the eye, about 30 microns of precision, maybe 40.
Right.
Robot can do 5.
Yes.
My reaction time is maybe 200 milliseconds. An F1 race car driver is like 150 milliseconds. The robot's 5 milliseconds.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah. I mean, I'm looking through a microscope with my eyes. But the robot's doing that also in 4K, 3D, but also has real-time OCT. So any given fraction of a second knows exactly where the poster capsule is.
And it's down to the, you know, to the nanometer, right? So, but at that level, humans just, no matter how good you are, you're not quite as accurate in terms of depth and where you are in the eye, even with your experience.
Yeah, but you can tell the robot, no matter what, don't let me come within 10 microns of the poster capsule. Okay, done.
Right. Yeah.
It's just like, wow. It's like, it's just a different world. It's just new. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's why cars are so safe when they're automated, because to the 1 second decision that you have to make at that decision, the robot can go through 100 scenarios in that 1 second. The car can do that. And the same thing in the eye, it's making all these decisions super fast. You do that, but it's able to go through all those scenarios. The car stops because it doesn't want you to hit something. Well, the device stops because it doesn't want you to hit a posterior capsule.
Right.
So it's driving. It's just a different location that it's driving.
Yeah, Alex, I'm super excited about all the AI stuff, and I'm obviously into it like you are, and I've got projects in the field. Our group has a couple of patents already in AI-related ophthalmology, like keratorefractive stuff and IOL calculation, et cetera. And we have more in process, so clearly I'm into it. But I'm also pretty happy that I'm on the second half of my career.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Scary starting off. To be the beginning of your career right now, is the unknown, to me at least, is a little scary.
Yes, and I'm optimistic that I have job security, that AI is going to have trouble examining a 2-year-old, mm-hmm. and that's still going to need a human who comes in and sings a song and plays with toys and rolls around with the kid to try and get a look at the eyes. Versus an AI, you know, and the number of exams I do where you're just chasing the kid and trying to get a glimpse, trying to capture that as an image that the AI can look, is always going to be difficult. So there's optimism. I'm also very optimistic about access. I really think that we're talking about a world where you can't be everywhere. Right. And if you go to some parts of the world where they don't have any access to healthcare or anyone as experienced as you, to be able to extend care to that part of the world means kids and adults will have the opportunity to reach their potential. So, I mean, that's a blessing. And that's something that we need to talk about, at least at some level, that access to healthcare is healthcare. That if you don't have that access, you're not getting healthcare.
Right. And I that can be a huge, huge help. I mean, last weekend, I was actually lecturing in South Africa at their annual cataract meeting. There's 250 ophthalmologists for their country.
Right.
I was like, what? Like, right. Oh my God, they work so hard. It's unbelievable. So yeah, even countries like that were pretty advanced. You're like, wow, there's just still a shortage of ophthalmologists and there's a huge need for this. So certainly I think it's going to change, but gosh, what your son said is kind of really resonating with me now.
Like, yeah, it's still echoing in my head.
It's for me too. It's like,
yeah. Well, and how do you feel about the fact that around the world, the leading cause of reversible blindness is still cataracts? Right. I mean, that here we are, we have people who are masters at cataract surgery, and yet there are people all around the globe that are suffering, and their world is changed because they have a cataract, for heaven's sakes.
Right.
So access matters.
Yeah. I mean, the country with the world's most ophthalmologists is India. Biggest population, we also have the world's most ophthalmologists. And they have incredible surgeons. And the statistic is, if all of them operated 24 hours a day, the rest of their lives, you will still not get rid of the backlog.
Right? It's hard to wrap our head around that.
And these are surgeons who will literally do 100 plus cataracts in a day.
Yeah, I visited LV Prasad. I couldn't believe what I saw.
It's amazing. It's truly amazing. Right. But yeah, there's still an unmet need. And, you know, the other thing too is we always think that Right now we have the robots just emulating us. It operates the way I operate. But maybe there's a better way. Like, I don't make it. If I sit temporally, I don't make a nasal incision because the axis is too weird for my hands. Well, the robot has no issue.
Right. I mean, you can come in the other way if you're a robot, right? So, yeah. That's a really good point. And I think there's going to be a lot of stuff in images that we haven't seen that, for whether it's a radiologist, a pathologist, or an ophthalmologist, there's stuff in that image that we don't process and we don't know what to do with, you know? So this becomes a really big deal. And, you know, I looked before I came on Cataract Coach. I'm the fifth pediatric ophthalmologist you've had on out of 150 or more guests.
Okay.
You need more representation from pediatric ophthalmologists, right?
You guys are rare birds.
Well, you had Ken Nischel on. Ken and I co-founded the World Society of Pediatric Ophthalmology and Strabismus, the largest society in the world for this. And what you do educating is what the World Society does. But if we could extend care and extend access by putting this equipment in the hands of people around the world, we can change the world for kids. And kids don't pick their parents. You know, your kids hit the parent lottery, whether they think so or not. You know, everybody in America basically hit the parent lottery. We live in an unbelievable country. And so it's not their fault. It's not their choice. Let's go help those kids by getting something out there that we can make a difference with them. And to me, that may be the best use of AI.
I think so, too. I'd love to have more pediatric ophthalmologists on the podcast. There are just so few. Like, but every year, how many? There's so few who finish fellowship in peds.
Yeah, because it's the hardest specialty. It's all the smartest people. So yeah, it's always hard to find us. If you can give me 10 seconds.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we run a fellowship, and we, knock on wood, we've matched, etc. But there aren't enough U.S. graduates applying to the fellowships to fill all the fellowships in the United States. In fact, we generally fill less than half. And so there's the capacity to train. And it is a huge issue in workforce to try and get more people to go into pediatric ophthalmology. And honestly, I do a ton of adult strabismus because you have all these adults with cranial nerve palsies, accidents, you know, thyroid eye disease. But there's nothing that gives you the satisfaction of helping a child.
Right.
There's just nothing. Yeah. And when the kid runs in and says, "Dr. Grant," and like runs into my arms and gives me a big hug, I don't need money. So it's to me, it's an incredibly rewarding life. And what are we on the planet for if it's not to make a difference for other people?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you should have your fellowship be pediatric ophthalmology, adults for business, and AI in ophthalmology.
You know what?
I'm ready.
I like that. I think I'm going to add that in. So we'll put an AI component to it.
Well, with you, you and your team there, you have an incredible deep expertise in this.
Yeah, and you know, nothing ever happens in isolation. You know that we always have teams that we work with, and without those people around, it would never go anywhere. So being at UCSD, where biotech lives and where the university itself has an incredible resource of just brilliant people that you kind of sit there and you go, what am I doing in the room? You know, they're just super smart. And it's the exciting part about what we do because, you know, you don't want to 10 years from now, you want to be better than you are today.
For sure.
Right.
Next year.
We're always curious. And that's what makes a great doctor. Curiosity, curious. What do I do better? How can I do better? What would change if I did this or I did that? That curiosity drives us to be the best we can and to be better for every patient to say, how do I do better? And without that, I would be dead. That curiosity is what gets me out of bed every day to make a difference. How do I do better today?
Yeah, for sure. If you're a young ophthalmologist, stay curious. Keep asking why. Keep learning. Absolutely.
Right. Yes, so, 100%.
And our last thing, so we've been talking an hour. I can't believe how much time we're having. I asked Gemini, I said, what's a great one question, great ending that I should ask Dr. Granite for a podcast?
Oh, God.
It says, I'm going to read this. This is a quote from Gemini. You've dedicated your life to the right for every child to see. When you look through the trajectory of AI today, are you more hopeful than you were 20 years ago that we can actually do something to end preventable blindness? And what is the one thing that AI must get right for that to happen?
Gemini said I dedicated my life to helping children see.
You
Holy
did.
Cow. Holy cow.
Yeah.
I hope my wife sees that one day, you know. It took my breath away hearing that.
Right.
So I think this goes to what we were a little bit of what we were just talking about, right, is that kids don't pick where they're born. They don't pick their parents. And it's our obligation as the adults in the world to help those children, because they're helpless without us. And so if we can extend care, and that's really you said it, there are brilliant doctors in India. There are brilliant doctors all over the world. And that's the World Society's ethos, that expertise resides all over the world.
Right.
And often they know more than we know. I got to show you, this is right on my desk. This is a dollar, and it's a refractor, an auto refractor from India, from L.V. Prasad. You look through it, it gives you a spherical equivalent, right, for a dollar.
Amazing. That is amazing. Right.
Okay. So because we're doing a project now to get kids' glasses all over the world, I got a company that's going to make glasses for $2. So, you know, our job, it's our responsibility to get involved and make a difference. And if we can use AI to extend access to help those children get the care they need, then that's a blessing. Retinopathy of prematurity is one of the leading causes of blindness across the world. Right. Well, you can take a nurse in a NICU and give them a camera, have them take a picture, analyze it. If it's ROP, teach the neonatologist how to inject VEGF and be able to treat them, right? So there are ways that we can work around the world to make sure that children have the vision they need to achieve their potential.
Absolutely. That's so well said. So I think AI is going to have a certainly big role here. I think they can help a lot, even little things, even having AI screen, like, look, this is the young child with large angle esotropia. That's easily fixed.
Yes. Right. I hate to say it, you know, bimedial recessions isn't that hard.
Right.
So, you know, we can do that, and we can help that kid. And there are parts of the world where you are shunned if you have strabismus.
Right.
And we know even in the United States, if you have strabismus and you're applying for a job, you're less likely to get it. You're less likely to get promoted. You're less likely to get a promotion in the military. You're less likely to be invited to a birthday party if you're a 7-year-old with strabismus.
Okay.
And that's all been studied, right? So not only is there the functional side of it, but there's that other secret of the psychosocial interaction,
right,
which matters, right, to how people look. So yeah, we can make a huge difference for kids in doing this. And trust me, the adults with strabismus, they want to get it fixed too. And so there are so many different ways to do it. We're studying now how to do a better prediction on how much surgery to do, and using AI to do that. So AI is going to be everywhere infusing it. I'd like to think that people with heart and brains,
right,
and empathy are helping guide that. So I hope so. I hope it's people like you, because here you are giving of your time. You travel all over to teach. You created something that has put in everyone's mind in ophthalmology, coaching doesn't end.
Right.
And I think that those are the kinds of things that you need humans for, and you need people with heart. And, you know, I appreciate being invited here, but frankly, I appreciate all that you're doing to make a difference in the world.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you so much. But yeah, I think I have a little bit of trepidation, a little bit of uncertainty about AI in the future, a little bit of healthy fear, but I have a large amount of hope and knowledge that this will be something good for our field. And it's just going to allow us to help us treat and help more patients.
Yeah. It, you know, there's not a tool in the world that doesn't have potential for harm. The car is great, right? 30 to 50,000 people die every year in car accidents. Right. So there's always a potential for harm, and it's our job to mitigate against that and make sure this is used well. I think we have to be at the table, and we have to be helping not just lawyers writing the rules and the governance.
Right.
Doctors have to be at that table writing the rules and the governance. And we can't give that away. We can't walk away from our role in that setting.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much to learn from you. I'm telling you, your fellowship, we're going to put a link down below. If you're a young ophthalmologist, if you're a resident, and you're thinking about, hey, you know, I kind of like the PEDS, I like strabismus, and I like AI, there's the link to your fellowship. I'll put it down in the description. You need to apply to this fellowship. I'm telling you.
You're super kind. Both my parents were university professors, one in nuclear physics and the other in education. Wow. And I think it's like part of my genome. Yeah. I like to teach. I like to help. I like to see the light bulb go off. And I know you feel the same way.
I do. Just an hour with you right now, it's like, wow, it just got me thinking. So I can't imagine spending a year with you. It'd be magical. A great time.
Well, there's so much we didn't even talk about, but
right,
you know, when they gave me 15 minutes in New Orleans, I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah,
15 minutes, really? So yeah.
But that's awesome. Again, thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I'm going to put a link down below to obviously your faculty profile, but also your fellowship link. Certainly, if you're a young ophthalmologist, we got a lot of young ophthalmologists listening, definitely consider this. Could you imagine how much better off you'd be after a year with you? It'd be amazing.
Oh, you're so kind. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Of course, anytime. Reminder, listeners and viewers, remember, we got a new Cataract Coach podcast every Sunday on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google. Anywhere you find a podcast, you find the Cataract Coach podcast. And of course, got a new Cataract Coach video every single day, 2,900 and counting. And then, of course, now we have RetinaRounds.com, our sister channel, along with podcast RetinaRounds and, of course, Retina videos. So until next time, I'll catch you later.